yourselves. Let's go around the room. We have some extra folks here. And then it's really her meeting, working with all of you, and we'll go from there. We're excited to get started. And this will be a three-meeting deal. This one, I'm sorry, we're not going to drag it out for a year and have you all coming around week after week or month after month. Darn it. So we want to introduce them. Rick Allen, I'm the interim city manager.
I'm Elaine Howard. I jumped in. I'm your facilitator. I'm an urban renewal consultant, and I've been doing this for going on 8 years now. And love working with cities and having public involvement. So,
Corey Martinez, I think everyone knows I'm 30 year compliant. Nikki Russell, the Russell Construction Inc. And our business is 41 years old. Which is crazy.
Yes.
We're not that old.
I know.
And I'm Dave Schneider, the general manager of the State Electric. I've been a LaPine resident for 19 years.
Corey Fleming, I'm on the planning commission, involved in the incorporation, and involved ever since.
I'm Kim Olex, I'm the mayor. I've lived here for 18 years.
Bob Schultz, director of Parks and Rec.
And you as director of LaPine Chamber of Commerce and 34-year long resident.
Steve Dodd with LaPine Ace Hardware. And I've been here 36 years.
Sure.
A beach bus.
Thank you.
Let's come back up to Dan and then let's get the people on the back. Everybody's introducing themselves.
All right. I'm Dan Barco. And you have more?
You're representing nonprofits.
And Newberry Habitat for Humanity. I'm a volunteer coordinator.
Great. So, let's go ahead.
Stu Martinez, current city councilor, playing citizen tonight. Been in LaPine since 1992. Here to watch and learn.
Kitty Shields, born here 63 years ago, and I've spent most of my 63 years living in LaPine. Former city councilor and mayor.
Ashley Williams, the utility billing specialist.
Tipper McMahon, city planner.
Greg Jones, city councilor.
Great. So, like Rick said, we have scheduled three meetings, and I do this a lot with different communities, and I usually find three meetings suffice. If something happens and we feel like we need more, we can always look at what we have to do to add that in, so we aren't trying to hurry anybody along through a process, but usually three meetings get us where we want to go. So how many of you came to the presentation that I gave a few months ago on Urban Renewal 101? So just a few people weren't here. Do you know what Urban Renewal is? Do you know how it works? Do you want me to give a quick overview of it?
Well, it might be nice.
Okay. Urban Renewal is actually a federally authorized program that the states then have taken the initiative to put in their constitution. So the state of Oregon authorized urban renewal in about 1957. And cities may make urban renewal agencies, counties may make urban renewal agencies, and housing authorities can make urban renewal agencies. And what urban renewal does is sets up a funding mechanism to allow the urban renewal agency, and typically cities, so I'll say city, to focus energy and commitment to a specific area of a city to make it improve. Urban renewal is governed by blight. You have to have an example of blight or an instance of blight in your urban renewal area, and blight is defined in the Oregon Revised Statute. There are six or seven different definitions of blight, but it's typically underdevelopment of properties, vacant properties that should be developed that aren't developed, the need for infrastructure, so utilities, water, sewer, any kind of services that don't exist, the need for pedestrian kinds of facilities. Those are the typical conditions of buildings. Those are the typical kinds of blight that governs urban renewal. So the way you form an urban renewal area is you establish a boundary. And that's one of the things that we're going to do tonight. And the way the funding works is once you've established a boundary and adopted an urban renewal plan, the assessor does something called freeze the base within that urban renewal area. And what that means is the total assessed value of all the property within that area, the assessor determines what that value is at the time that the plan is adopted. And the taxes off of that value continue going to all the different taxing jurisdictions, so the county, the fire district, the city. The growth within the area, the taxes off of the growth in that assessed area, therefore the taxes, goes to the urban renewal agency to do projects and programs within the urban renewal area. So that's the theory of urban renewal, is that you make plans for improvements within a specific part of your area. You're able to get more money because you're not getting just the city taxes, you're getting the whole tax base for that area. So you're able to use more funds to make that area grow and prosper. The negative, I guess you could call it negative, the impact of urban renewal is on the other taxing jurisdictions because they cease to gain taxes off any increased value within an urban renewal area. So that's an important thing to understand and to consider when you're doing urban renewal, is the fire district, the city, the county no longer will get taxes off the parks, the school district, off of the increase in value within that urban renewal area.
But it's just that little district.
So, and just that district, not the whole city, just the district. There are limitations to urban renewal, and for cities your size, you may not have more than 25% of your total acreage in urban renewal, and you may not have more than 25% of your total assessed value. So one of the things that we'll talk about a bit as we move forward to talk about boundary is, I don't think we have a problem with the acreage because you have a lot of acreage in Lapine, but we want to make sure that we decide how much of the assessed value should be in an urban renewal area. And we'll get to that in a little bit. So when urban renewal first starts, the amount of money that comes in off of an urban renewal area is pretty small because it's typically just that 3% that your taxes are allowed to increase each year. The value on your property is increased by, it's limited by only 3%, and probably in Central Oregon it's been lower than that in the last 5 or 6 years. Property values have gone down instead of going up. So urban renewal starts out slowly. It is a cumulative effect because that 3% then becomes 6%, becomes 9%. So you start getting enough money to actually do some projects. If there's new development within an urban renewal area, the total amount of that value of the new development goes to the urban renewal area. So that's usually the best way to get some increment early in an urban renewal area, is if you have new development coming on and you're able to capture that within the urban renewal area, then use the taxes off of that to help make urban renewal work. So an urban renewal plan and report are what's required to establish an urban renewal area, and a public process. And the public process doesn't require this, but in my working with communities, the most successful urban renewal areas have started by having a lot of good public input and having the taxing jurisdictions here, having people from the community, business owners, and representatives of the community here working together to decide both what a boundary is, what your goals and objectives are, and what kinds of projects you think need to be done to help make your community prosper. So that will be what we'll be developing, is an urban renewal plan and an urban renewal report. So any questions about how urban renewal works, or how that 3% works, how the financing works? So our agenda tonight is to go over the basics, which we just did, to talk about the decisions that you'll be making, to go over our schedule, talk about the committee structure, to look at the boundary, and to try to come up with a tentative boundary. And once we do that boundary, we'll have to then test it against those 25% limitations to make sure we're within those. And then talk about future meetings and public input ideas.
I had a brainstorm. Be careful, Bob. Here's my question. That if we're really thinking about blight, because I've been listening to you and looking at this map and identifying everything, What happens if we decide in the room here, this is just an example, that everything on the right-hand side of Highway 97 is blight, and that's what we want to work on, but it doesn't include anything like, if, what happens if we decide to draw a boundary that doesn't include parks, schools, libraries, or the fire district? Then how do you get the financing for urban renewal?
It doesn't matter whether the park, schools, fire district are within the boundary.
They pay anyway.
What you get is, when you get your property tax bill, it's divided out, and it says X amount of money goes to the parks, X amount of money goes to the fire districts. So the way urban renewal is calculated is off of the properties that are within the area and the amount they would pay to the Parks Bureau, to the school district, to the city.
So
they don't have to be located.
It benefits not the agencies are going to pay for it to be included in the boundary is my question, because they can benefit possibly from a project. Whereas if they're not in the boundary, they're going to pay, but they're not going to benefit.
If you're not in an urban renewal boundary, you may not have projects done using urban renewal funds.
Bingo.
So
okay.
You want to be included.
So
that's what I'm saying. I was running it through so everybody could know the agency with me.
If there's a project that the Parks Bureau wants done and you think it's an important project, then the parks, whatever park that is, should be within your boundary. One of the things you try to be really careful on with urban renewal is you do want to consider helping the other taxing jurisdictions do projects. But if all you do is help the other taxing jurisdictions do projects, you're never going to increase the value of your community, and it's just like them getting their own taxes anyway. So the theory of urban renewal is you help increase that property tax base. And you increase that property tax base by improving tax-paying properties within your urban renewal area. So you want to make sure that not all of your projects go to helping your other taxing jurisdictions or to helping your nonprofits. You want to make sure that part of them go to making sure that base goes up, the tax base within your urban renewal area, so that those commercial properties gain in value, because that's where you're going to get your money to do projects within urban renewal. So what we're going to have input on to this committee is the urban renewal plan and report. Hopefully we'll get you involved in what kind of public involvement we want to do, how we want to get the rest of the community on board with urban renewal. If there's anything you want to suggest that we do, we'll talk about that. So we're having the meeting tonight. The second meeting is scheduled for April 17th and the third one for May 22nd. So if you all can make sure to get those on your calendars, so that we can get as many people at all the meetings as possible, that would be great. Our committee structure is really informal. I don't do minutes for the meetings. I don't take down everybody's comments. What I do is send back to Rick a list of decisions that are made. So the decision might be the boundary should be from here to here. We're gonna check that boundary and make sure this happens. So I don't say, you know, so-and-so said this and so-and-so said that. It's basically just a synopsis of where we're going and what decisions we made. So if somebody feels like they want more than that, then they need to speak up and somebody be appointed.
We are taping this.
Okay.
So we'll have a tape so people can listen.
Okay, so if anybody wants to go back and listen to the tape or compose anything from it,
that's right.
Yeah, good idea.
Is that fine? I mean, is that bother you?
Not at all. That's totally fine. Yep. So, okay with everybody that I don't do specific minutes, that we send out lists of decisions, and then if somebody thinks I've got it wrong, they then let me know and say, no, this is really where we were going, we weren't going there, and that typically doesn't happen, but if it does, I'm totally open to input on it. Any questions? So, the components of an urban renewal plan. Urban renewal plans are defined by statute of what has to be in them. So there are certain things that have to be in an urban renewal plan. And a lot of it is just statutory language that has been developed over time by urban renewal attorneys, and I'm not an attorney, I'm a practitioner, that meet the requirements of the statute for what an urban renewal plan has to have. So you usually have an introduction that, of course, is individual to each urban renewal plan, so it talks about your community and the process that you go through to develop an urban renewal plan. There's goals and objectives, and that is always individual. And that is something that we'll be working on next week as goals and objectives. And today, I want you to give me some, when we establish the boundary, you'll give me some input for goals and objectives. And I'll come back to you with some draft ones for you to work with and change or, work on. So goals and objectives are something that's totally different for each urban renewal plan, and they're totally designed to fit your own community and your own situation. And it's basically, what do you want to accomplish with urban renewal in your area? The outline of major projects, that's another thing that we'll talk about and decide here and recommend to your urban renewal agency, which has yet to be formed and will have to be formed as part of this process. So we'll talk about what kinds of things do you think should happen in your urban renewal area? What kinds of projects do you think will cause your area to improve? And I'll go through with you the typical kinds of projects, and you can say, yeah, that would be a great project for our area, or no, we don't need that, that's not something that we want to do here. So the first three, four things are totally things that I want your input on, that you'll help in the design of the urban renewal plan. All of the rest of those, except amendments, are things that are the same in every urban renewal plan. Property acquisition and disposition just cites what the urban renewal agency by law is allowed to do in terms of acquiring and disposing of property. Relocation is something that is specified by statute about what you have to do in relocation, so it's not anything I ever change in an urban renewal plan. The tax increment financing of the plan is also something that's in every plan, and it talks about how tax increment financing works and that you will comply with the law, so we don't change anything in that, except we do establish what your maximum indebtedness is going to be. And the maximum indebtedness is the controlling feature of an urban renewal plan. It is what decides how much money you can spend in an urban renewal area over the life of an urban renewal plan. And you get to that maximum indebtedness by looking at what your area is and looking at a time frame for urban renewal and trying to project how much tax increment, that thing above the frozen base, might be able to be earned within an urban renewal area over a specific time period. So you guys will give me input on the time period. You'll say 20 years, 25 years, 30 years, that's how long we want to do this. And then I'll come back to you with an amount of financing that we think could be raised within that time period, and that will then be established as a maximum indebtedness. So I hear Bob back there breathing a big sigh.
That's tough. I mean, that's a long time to be pulling money out of agencies.
Usually the shortest, the very shortest urban renewal plan I've ever worked on is a 10-year plan. And that's in Wilsonville, but it's only there for individual specific properties and only where they're giving a property tax rebate to that property owner. Okay? So you know the income's coming in because the owner's paying property taxes. That property tax will be rebated back to the owner if they do specific investments. In most urban renewal plans, by 10 years, they're hardly earning any money at all because of the slow amount of growth, and Lapine will be that way. The slow amount of growth that it takes to actually put some money together for urban renewal. So the last two major plans that I worked on, one was in McMinnville and one was in Gold Beach. And they, the one in Gold Beach, I believe, was 20 years and the one in McMinnville was 25 years. So what we can do is make projections for you and say, this is how much money we think you might be able to raise in 20 years. This is how much we think you might be able to raise in 25 years. And then if you want to look at a 30-year, and then you look at the projects you think you want to do, and you say, okay, these projects cost this amount of money, and you kind of balance the two. Because if these are the projects you want to do, and you know you need to do those projects to make your city work, and you aren't going to get enough money to do those unless you go at least 20 years, you need to go at least 20 years. Otherwise, there's no sense in doing it. So it's a balancing act trying to make those things work. So we'll first talk about projects, and then the third meeting, we'll talk about finances, and by then I'll be able to give you projections, and we'll balance those projects against projections. So, fun stuff. Interesting stuff.
And don't take me trying to be rude. I'm the only one here that I can see that's representing anybody that's going to pay for any of this. So I'm just...
I think it's great.
Trying to bring up the...
Yeah.
Like, well, you know, you're talking about a long time.
Yep. So, yeah. And actually, the mayor's representing the city, and the city has the same issue. They'll not be getting the taxes off that increased growth for that time period also.
Sorry,
so it's a...
It's a tough one.
Yeah, it is. It is tough.
Well,
hopefully.
The theory. This always comes up. I think it's important to say. I mean, it's that going in for the operation. If those of us with a bad knee or we limp, and you never go to a doctor, you will limp your whole life. But that's why we go to a doctor. And then you go through. You know, when you get the next day, you're not feeling too good. But the hope is that you're cured. So yes, you will give some revenue for that length of time. Actually, it's a pretty small amount. When you look at your district, just let me go. 80-some% of your value is outside the city. So 80-some% is outside the city. So it can't be affected. We can only go maximum of 25% of the value of in the city. So we're like 18% of your value, and then you can only take 25% of that. And then you only get the 3% growth. When you start running this down,
and we'll show you those.
When
we do the financial analysis, we show you the projections for each taxing jurisdiction for each year.
But the theory then is Lapine becomes a better place to live and do business.
Yeah. Oh, I understand that.
Right. So then someone goes over and builds in Crescent Creek, which won't be in the boundaries. They build a $300,000 house. And they pay taxes, you get that.
Right.
And then from here to Sun River, where your district is, anyone that builds, again, you're making this area better. You bring more customers to Ace Hardware because people are looking at Lapine as a place to do business and to live. So there's a little pain for a lot of gain. And if you just look at what you're losing, then it's just all... So what you're saying, everybody thinks and goes, but that's what I look at. Isn't that what you find?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And if you started, I mean, you can look at the different urban renewal areas around you. Redmond has a very successful urban renewal area. And downtown was an urban renewal area. They did some really great things there. Madras, where Rick worked, or were mayor, right?
Yeah.
Has a very successful urban renewal area. So.
That's true.
Sisters, yes.
That's
where they're
downtown
right now. Yeah. So, yes, it absolutely, and I always try to remind people as you go through this that there is impact on somebody. And this isn't free money. There is impact on somebody, and the impact is on the taxing jurisdiction. So.
Then the last thing I say is, the other thing is he talked about, he was on the right track if it's within the boundaries, the parks history. His loss, you'll get a number. His loss over the 20 years might be 50 grand, 100 grand, who knows what the number is, I don't know. But you may allocate some, one of the areas is community facilities. You know, and so then the Parks District right downtown may get a $100,000 building from urban renewal that exceeds what he's given in. See, so that's the other thing. And so really, schools are the ones that aren't going to get a dime out of it. And the county most likely as much other than general taxation.
So let's talk about schools for a minute. And I know I went over this in the program that we had before, but schools are a little bit different in terms of how they get their money. They don't get their money directly. When you pay your money to the assessor, the city gets that money directly from the assessor. When you pay your money to schools, the assessor pays that money to the state school fund. It doesn't go directly to your schools. It goes to the state school fund. If the state school fund, the way the school's funded is on a per pupil basis, how many students are enrolled per day, right? So the state school fund establishes, the legislature establishes a per pupil payment to the schools. And they do that when they meet every 2 years. They establish what that amount is going to be per pupil. If that amount isn't If your property taxes that go to the state school fund isn't enough to pay that, they backfill that with lottery funds, they backfill that with income taxes. So although that money from urban renewal doesn't go to that state school fund, the legislature establishes how much money they're going to use for education, and if it doesn't come out of property taxes, they pull it from other sources. So it's an indirect hit to schools. It's not a direct hit to schools. So we need to understand that. There is some controversy over that because people say, well, okay, if you're taking the money out of these other sources, who's not getting that money? On the other hand, urban renewal is funded through property taxes, and schools are funded through property taxes. So you don't want to pit the two against each other and say you should get the money or you should get the money because they're both really worthwhile, but that's the way our system works right now. So, just to understand, it's really complicated. Amendments, you do have some input on amendments. There are two kinds of amendments in an urban renewal plan. They have to be what are called substantial amendments, and those are the highest level of scrutiny. They have to go through the same process as the development of an urban renewal plan. And the only ones required by statute are if you increase your maximum indebtedness, that number that we established that you can use for projects and programs, and if you add more than 1% of acreage to your urban renewal area. Sometimes cities decide there's something that's really important to them that they don't want changed, and they want to make that also a substantial amendment. So we work with you on that, and you make a decision. Usually the way I write an urban renewal plan is those two things are substantial amendments and everything else are minor amendments that can be done by the urban renewal agency. Sometimes some cities have an urban renewal agency that is not the city council itself. It's made up of citizens and business owners and the taxing jurisdictions. And in those localities, usually they have a third level of amendments called council approved amendments. So if the urban renewal agency makes a decision, they're not the city council, and it's of a level that the city council thinks they ought to be involved. And usually those are if a project costs more than $500,000, it has to go to city council to also approve. Or if there's the acquisition of specific kinds of property and the city council says, we really want to be involved in that, you can make those recommendations, but we want the final say, then you can make those a city council decision. So as we're developing the plan, we'll also want to talk about who the city wants as their renewal agency. Do they want it to be just the city council? Do they want it to be the city council plus other people? If they want that, then we'll put in this other level of amendment, usually, which is a council approved amendment. So that'll be a decision that we'll have to make as we go along. And then there's something called relationship to local objectives, and that's a really tedious chore that I get to do, which is just go through your comprehensive plan and say how your urban renewal plan conforms with your comprehensive plan. It's not something you guys want to have to get involved in at all. Deborah may have to look at it with me, but other than that, it's just part of the legal part of what we have to do in an urban renewal plan. So those are the components. Those are listed in the statute. Those are what is in every urban renewal plan. Your decisions will mostly be on boundary goals and objectives projects. You can put amendments up there too, because if you do something with how your agency is formed, we may change how amendments are done. An urban renewal report is a technical appendix to an urban renewal plan. So it's where we look at the costs of projects and the financing and make projections of what the impact is on the taxing jurisdictions. It also is specified in the statute. It says everything that you have to have in an urban renewal report. So you have to do an existing conditions analysis. So you have to talk about what the land use is, what the zoning is, what the comprehensive plan designation is. You have to say why you select the area, and typically we just say we select the area because it's blighted. And that's the way our attorneys want us to define why you select the area. You do the relationship between projects and existing conditions. So typically where that ties in is if on the existing conditions you say you lack sewer an adequate size sewer line from X to X, and maybe one of your projects is you want to increase the size of that sewer line, you just say, this is the project, and we're doing it because it is deficient and it's identified in our existing conditions. So we just tie as we can those projects to what the existing condition of that project is. So if it's a loan program, then we say there isn't a loan program in the community, but there are buildings that need to be improved. So you tie it to what the existing conditions are. The financial analysis is pretty complicated, and we put certain specific tables in an urban renewal plan. We do projections over time periods, 20, 25, 30 years, of how much money can be gained. We do the projections of what the impacts on the taxing jurisdictions will be. And that's all something that you guys will get to look at in that third meeting and go through with us. And then we have to do the compliance with the requirements of total assessed value and total acreage. So we just do a little chart that shows how, what percentage your urban renewal area will have of your total city area. So the committee decisions on a report are about the project, typically. What projects do you want to do and how much money do you want to allocate to those projects? And you decide that kind of based on our, maybe in Sisters, they're doing their Main Street right now. I think ODOT, I don't know for sure, I'm talking off the top of my head, because it should be ODOT put some money into that because it's an ODOT road. So typically, if an urban renewal area is doing a project like that and ODOT owns the road, ODOT probably had scheduled maintenance of that road and the agency decided they wanted to do the sidewalks at the same time. So that's typically the way those things will work. So when you do your budget, you'll say, okay, the road overlay is going to be paid for out of ODOT. The sidewalks would be paid for out of urban renewal, and we estimate it'll cost X amount of dollars. So you look for other funding sources. You try to leverage your money and make sure that you can use as many other funding sources for your projects as you can. And then you balance that against that number that we say is the amount of money we think you might be able to raise within your area. So again, that's your balancing act. On the financial analysis, really the input we need from you is, and we really can't make that till we look at the projects and the amount of money, but is that time frame. That's the input that we'll want from you. So, boundary. This is our map. I think when I first came out and Rick and I talked, we talked about urban renewal would be best suited in your commercial area. And the commercial area is shown on this map in pink. Rick assures me that it's probably less than 25% in acreage.
It would have to be.
The total acreage of the community is 4,474, and 25% would be 1,118.
Okay, and do you have any idea how much acreage you have in your commercial zone?
I don't, off the top of my head.
So we can...
we can figure that out, though.
Yeah, and we can adjust this.
Yeah.
So the...
well, you can, if you want to, just to look back, did it ever turn around, point to the commercial zone in that map on the left, probably. See that pink?
Yeah.
See all the rest of those colors? That's
okay,
the same.
So that's pretty
we're
easy.
Not even
you should be
in
good shape. No. So that's, yeah, that's pretty easy to see that.
Yeah.
So assessed value will be the other consideration. That'll probably, in Gold Beach, on the project that I just finished there, we did the entire commercial strip and we were right at the 25%. So typically, in a community your size, your commercial area will be right at the 25%. Deborah?
I'm sorry to interrupt. One thing beyond the commercial is that big triangle of green right there at the top. Yep. It's mixed use. It's with the zone change, it can go to mixed use. You may want to consider those things because those are the places where people are wanting to develop first.
That's
if that helps you.
Yep, that's a great input. So I guess the response I need from you is what to talk about the boundary, to talk about what things you think need to happen in your city, and are they within this boundary? Does this boundary, the commercial part, make sense to you? So some feedback on that.
Well,
yeah.
Well, I think we want to enhance the area that our visitors see and that we see most of the time when we're going back and forth doing our things. So I think Highway 97 in Huntington is generally the area that most of us think about wanting to target.
So there.
You know, on the left side, the west side, you kind of got a natural boundary with the, out here.
The wetlands.
The wetland. And so don't you, do you normally just take, the, you know, that's a crooked line, but do you normally, you go tax lots?
The assessor loves us if we go tax lot. If we go crooked line through tax lots, they are
I'm
not happy with
this. I'm assuming if you take these tax lots, there's nothing really behind us. You could take, it's behind your,
yeah.
Take the tax lots so it's easier. Because
yeah.
Isn't that just drop off? And
mm-hmm. Every once in a while, if we have to, we'll split a tax lot. But it's really hard on the assessor if we do that because they have to apportion different, they have to do different tax codes to what's in an urban renewal area and what's not, and so it just makes it hard on them. So we would try to keep it clean to tax lots.
One of the other areas Deborah, I mentioned where Gordy just bought up that yellow, there's the schools. The big
yep.
block is the schools.
Uh-huh.
Gordy bought that yellow,
is
so that where we were looking at apartments. It requires zone change. Remember, this is a 20-year deal, though. So I'm assuming that yellow square there, has that got the senior center in it and
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That just
so.
That whole square. That whole
right.
thing. Just all that yellow kind
yeah.
of
yeah.
Well
yeah.
yeah, the whole thing.
Yes.
This is
yeah.
this is where he was looking at a park. These are all schools. But you know, you got Bimart in there and isn't that Bimart and
yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, that's
Bimart
South.
That's Bimart South.
Where's Bimart?
Right there.
Right
there.
Yeah. What's in here? Senior Center?
Yeah.
Senior center.
Yep. And then there's that.
Well,
there's
the shoes. Well, they might build a third phase someday.
Well, 232 lots, subdivision. It's all
schools. It's in this?
Yeah, that's our property. That's already platted.
Right here?
Yeah, right. It's by
how many?
232. A lot. It would be coming up to, it comes up over, it would be going also in some of the light, the master plan.
It's above that, isn't it?
Yeah,
yeah that's it.
Yeah.
That's
well,
it.
Victory Way is part, you go in
part,
on
yeah.
Victory
oh,
Way.
Oh,
yeah,
so
yeah,
right
yeah, and you go
right.
straight
right.
in on Victory
right.
Way.
It's
yeah.
back here.
Well, this back here, yeah, there. That's it. Oh.
Yeah.
Well, so maybe we will have together, but is that good? Okay, ask you the question. So that's it's a plan, master plan community that they hope to develop. Is that good to take in?
Right. Yeah.
Hmm.
You know, it's good and it's bad.
Yeah.
It's good because if it's developed, the money would all go to urban renewal. It's bad because if it was developed, all the money would go to urban renewal. So you have to think about what's reasonable to put within your area and what isn't. So typically I tell people those things that are associated with your area, it's reasonable to put them in, right? So they're talking about a motel.
Right.
To me, that's totally reasonable to put in because it's part of your commercial area. It supports your commercial area. Part of it, oh, it's not personal because what you want to do is build this whole area. I mean, that's
yeah.
the objective
yeah.
of everybody here.
Yeah.
And you want the city to continue to benefit and the agencies.
Right. So you guys have to decide if you have a development like this, do you want all of the increased taxes off that to go
yeah.
to your urban renewal area, or do you think only part of that.
Are you what you're saying? Almost, let's just pick on our red sweater gentleman. because to a degree, if we're going to take value from Bob's commercial, what he's hoping is he gets the new house value. Right,
right.
Bob? Because that's the secondary trade-off. I think what you're trying to say is if you take the value from the commercial district and then the benefit of Lapine looking better, they start
mm-hmm.
to build new houses. And if you take that, it's kind of like a double whammy.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the only way I make that work in my head is if you say in your original description, not only blight, but lots that need to be developed. because otherwise it doesn't fit in my head as urban renewal, because it's not anything yet. So I don't know.
And the question is, can you develop that property without any kind of infrastructure being put there by the city? Is the infrastructure there that you need to be able to develop that property?
The infrastructure is there. The property itself isn't, but that's part of the development cost. So you just
right,
do that. I think we have enough life in a lot of areas.
So it's a very, I think we'll know better once we look at some financial projections, and we may start with saying, let's put that as a maybe down here. Let's look at what kinds of financial projections we can make off of potential development within the commercial core, and see what kind of money it gets us, and compare that to the projects that we think we want to do, and is that enough? And if it's not enough, then you say, okay, does it make sense to take part of this or not? But I'm reluctant to throw it in on the first round, just because I like the other taxing jurisdictions to continue getting that money that maybe isn't directly related to the urban renewal area. If it needed infrastructure, it'd be different. If you needed to run the sewer there, or that would never develop, then I'd say, let's get some of that. But if it's got what you need, other than the ability, you know, the zoning, right, then I become a little more wary.
The senior, the Deschutes Lodge, that housing is subsidized housing, I believe, for seniors. How does that play into it? Because it's not...
Is it a nonprofit?
Yeah.
If it's a nonprofit, they don't pay taxes, and so
they
wouldn't...
Well, they pay taxes. That's
it's that, right
you know, they have right a tax abatement.
Yeah,
I think what we talked about is that maybe there was going to be another development.
I think they are.
They're for profit. If they're for profit, even if it's for lower income, if they're a for profit company, then they'll pay the property taxes, and you would benefit.
But and they get some kind of
service. They have a 10-year abatement.
Yeah,
a 10-year abatement. To me, that makes more sense because it is a commercial kind of venture. So where the single family housing, to me, is something a little different.
Vicki, is the Arrowhead there the property you're talking about that you have?
Where the arrow, it comes over, that's what I'm looking. I'm looking at also the beige
right here.
Area.
Here's what I'm trying to, this piece right here, this is county, and these two pieces right here are Little Deschutes Lodges, right here, Senior Center. This is where Gordy owns his 8 acres on the north end of this piece of property. And is this yours?
It's in which is part of it, and in the beige. Go over into the
beige. Oh, up in here?
Yeah.
Or up in here?
No. Oh, right. Oh, it's there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Some of this,
it's
because
55
I understood one time that when I got a permit from the forester, that there was some county property in here.
There is.
Yeah.
There
is. And I got a permit to cut firewood for seniors off that property. So, I just want to get that in my head, that there's
Well, either way, it's single family. It's planned for single family, either way.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, this may not seem logical to you guys, but I feel differently about apartments because, again, they're more of a commercial than the single family. So in my mind, you might think about pulling the apartments in where you wouldn't think about pulling the single family in.
One thing I didn't ask, and I didn't, but I know Wilsonville's doing a checkerboard. I'm assuming, A, you don't want to or you can't, other than that was kind of special, just so that question come up. Can you leap somewhere to take in a piece of life?
You can leap as long as you have a cherry stem to attach.
Okay.
The way Wilsonville did their checkerboard, they have two They have a couple of issues. I just finished doing a strategic plan with them, so it's really interesting. They have a couple of old urban renewal areas, and they've been so successful that they've released value out of them. So they've taken them off the urban renewal, put it back on the tax rolls, but we still have a cherry stem connecting all of those parcels that are still in the urban renewal.
So you basically can follow a road out
follow
to
a road,
property.
Or you put. We're going to take the sidewalk right away along this road to connect this area to that area.
Yeah.
But that happened in Wilsonville because they've been really very successful and they're releasing value back to the taxing jurisdictions. And then they did that other thing that I did with them, which was the individual properties, but each one of those is its own urban renewal area. They did 6 individual properties. Each separate urban renewal areas, because our legal counsel said we couldn't do them all as one. They had
well,
to be connected.
Then should you ask? I mean, sometimes you have to ask things because you need to reject them.
Mm-hmm.
Because you want to make sure this group, that's why you're here to vet things.
Right.
It's not on that map, but what's out north 3 miles?
Mm-hmm.
So you could cherry stem down Highway 97 to Wickia, and you could go around the commercial area. Wickia, now it may throw our value off, but we don't know that yet. So I was just wondering if that's...
Well, it's certainly blighted.
It is blighted. So what's your philosophy on Wickia? If it can be included, does it make sense to include it rather than maybe, you know, coming down a side street over here where, you know, you cut it, you know, here, and as long as the value works, do you take in that little thing?
Well, I'm in favor of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, me too.
It's the entrance to your city.
That's where we have the trouble.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't have a lot of trouble with that 90-pit, really.
Or in the back areas.
Or William Foss, there's no value to have that there. I don't know what would you do there.
It's just commercial zone. That's, I'd like to hear from everyone on that. We want participation. That's why the 9 of you, you guys, if you think about it, the 9 or 10 of you are going to set the urban renewal for 20 years in this community. So don't sit here quiet. They'll cuss you 15 years from now if you do it wrong.
Do you want this to take all of these over here? Both? Okay, this is Huntington.
I want to go the lots, these spaces, Morris. So you want to go one lot back because you're going to go down the street.
Okay, how about here?
Now, just a second. What's back here?
Yeah.
What is this?
Just a few houses. That is all.
That lot right
is
there.
Is that?
Yeah,
is it lighted?
Pretty bad houses.
Oh, yes. It's white.
Yeah.
That's,
but they're houses. Right. I mean,
yes.
But it's a commercial zone, so that could transition something.
Yes.
Mm. Okay.
No, because there's some people that want to put commercial buildings back there.
You can run that.
Yeah.
Tanker
and
this long, skinny one must be part of almost this. That because you know it looks like just those, so just
actually,
do that
you could go right
that
right there.
That's
where your
AZ,
is.
Yeah, that road.
Yeah. Salzer.
Right,
yeah,
Salzer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go down Salzer.
Yeah.
There. Yeah, follow the cross line.
Of course, crossing the yellow is the bus barn.
There you go.
Yeah.
And I've got to say, just to revisit the apartment idea, the first thing I see over and over as a red-shirted gentleman is the first thing that usually goes downhill after a few years is an apartment complex.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would be very much in favor of putting a little rectangle up there if that's what's going to happen there, because usually somebody comes in, Gordy's not a young man, mm-hmm. and they have a plan, they build a nice place, and before you know it, it's somebody that's just there for some money and they don't care what it looks like. So I mean, that's it's not blighted because it's not anything yet, but if you're going to talk for potential of development and blighting, that's kind of a double whammy.
I like the idea of it being a commercial and not a housing development that it fits.
Not a single family.
Right,
development.
Not a single family.
But you're okay with apartments.
Yeah.
Is there opposition to putting the apartment proposed apartment?
I agree with Bob. You know, and Kirby just said she does too. I think that should be something that is examined at the end of our boundaries, maybe instead of, a piece right now.
You don't want them included, maybe.
I do not want them included.
Oh, I think Bob was saying he did.
I do want him included.
You do want him included?
Yeah, because I think that the first thing that goes down the drain.
So you're thinking that you would be investing dollars back in
because
future.
That's because Gordy's not a young guy, and what may happen is he may build some nice apartments, but my experience is people go into apartments, they make their money, and then they sell it, and then pretty soon, you know, after they're 5 or 10 years old, someone else owns them, and they don't really care about anything but getting money out of them. So I think it's commercial, it's not single family, and I think it's got potential to be blight. Because that's, you know.
Well, the reason I can support golf grounds, well, two things. One is you have to have a mix of potentially the higher probability of developing land, because as she said, anything new, where does that money go?
Right.
So if you only take places that nothing's going to happen, so one thing about our park, you build $1 million apartment building,
yeah.
It does two things. One, that money comes into urban renewal.
Yeah.
But two, we've now added 20 families who go shopping and eating.
Yeah. Right.
And so then they spend money. And so that's the thing. And so you do need some areas that with tools here, senior center and shopping, this block to me is where, if you look out over 10 or 15 years, that's where someone may build something.
And this is vacant here?
And that's blight. That is blighted in that area. And you've got the old county building barn there, and there's two or three houses. It's pretty tough.
Yeah. But is that low-income apartments, or is that?
We're not. We're just in the apartments.
Because
it's low income. They
still pay taxes. But we do, that's one thing, you know, we do need apartments here in La Pine, period. You know, there's not a lot of multiple housing. And one of the areas is the only apartments we have are blighted.
There were a couple new people who raised your hand on that, so I wanted you to get your comments in.
Yeah. Kind of my thought really is too, is I mean, it tends to grow this value quickly,
mm-hmm.
right? And would you want to target those areas that would potentially grow really fast and add a lot of stuff.
But it's a balancing act. You want to grow it and do it, but you don't want to grab everything because then it's
right.
just a grab. So to me, that makes sense
right.
because.
Well, waiting for the other six values to come up.
Right.
Because the town as a whole is going to take a long, long time.
Slow.
So you got to get some stuff in there that's going to grow the values.
That's correct.
Or grow the growth and assessment value quickly.
That's correct. And that's why you probably would want to include this. Too, because if something developed there, then and it's next to the commercial area, you would think that that also then would add some value to your renewal area to make that increment grow.
That makes sense. I mean, it just is. I just think it'll be interesting to run the numbers and the percentages when if we charge them out to the northern.
Give me a show of hands. How many people think that it makes sense to cherry stem up to Wiki Up and pick that up? Everybody. Okay.
Oh, I'm just here.
You're just here to listen. Okay. So we'll look at that.
Question. If those, say, apartments do go in and they're within the urban renewal and they become blighted, what responsibility does urban renewal have to upgrade them?
It has no responsibility.
Just somebody wants to, or
it's just if.
But then they get to the point where someone's got to do something because they become so run down.
So urban renewal has the capability to loan money.
Yeah, they have money available.
So why should they?
They could loan to businesses to improve their storefronts, and a lot of times storefront. Are grants, not just loans, and they give matching grants. You know, you put in $5,000, we'll put in $5,000, but they can loan to businesses at a lower interest rate to improve properties. So there could be the potential if it happens like Bob says that they're built, they're sold, somebody doesn't take care of them, and the city decided you needed to do something about it, you could potentially have some funds that you would say, okay, let's go approach this property owner and get this improved so it's an asset to our community again and not a detriment to it.
But they couldn't do that if they were not in the boundary.
That's correct.
That's what I like about it.
Okay.
That makes sense.
But again, remember, this is our first urban renewal, and not to be thinking too far out there. Mm-hmm. You know, we're still small. This is brand new to us.
Okay, so let me tell you the other constraint about urban renewal, to just put in your mind. If you form an urban renewal area that's 100 acres, you may never add more than 20% of the original acreage of an urban renewal area. So you could add 20%, it would be a substantial amendment. Remember, we talked about that higher level of amendment if you have anything over 1%.
And how often can you do that?
You can add the under 1%. Different attorneys will tell you different things. One attorney will say, if you've added 1%, anything else is over 1%, right? Where another attorney has told me, well, if you just do 1% at a time, you're okay, right? But what I'm trying to say is, if you start small and you think, well, maybe we really should have included these, we'll want to look and say, okay, whatever our acreage is, we can only add an additional 20% over the life of this area. And if we think we want to go up to Wikia and in the future or not now, let's figure out what that acreage is and whether you would be able to do that in the future or not.
Oh, and you can also have more than one urban
renewal. You can have more than one urban renewal area. You still have that 25% cap, but you can do it in, Lebanon has 3 urban renewal areas. Astoria has 2 urban renewal areas. So
Redmond, I think, has 2.
Which one?
Redmond
just has 1. They closed down 1.
Ben
they
had 2. But Ben has Juniper Ridge's 1. That's how Juniper Ridge built their, they just did industrial park, technically. But I was listening to Eric King on the radio today on KBND, but talking about Juniper Ridge. That's how they took bare ground, formed an urban renewal. Les Schwab went out, built their headquarters, assessed it several million. They paid property taxes. Ben went and borrowed money to put in infrastructure, and that's how they make the payments. So that's why the apartments, if the apartment's gonna pay 25 grand a year property taxes, maybe you put 100 grand of urban renewal in the streetscape on Huntington. Street trees and curb and sidewalk. Mm-hmm. And you're actually gonna get that money back through the property taxes.
Right.
See, so that's really how it works.
And I think, in terms of Bob's concern, if you're improving your city and you're doing other things in your city, it's more likely that whoever buys that apartment building in the future, when the guy who develops it sells it, that they'll want to keep it nice because they'll get higher rents and the rest of the city is improving. So it's a spin-off benefit. So if you do nice things out there and it has helped you do it because you're able to gain the taxes off of that, you'll help keep it nice for a longer period of time. So there's that kind of pressure. What you usually find, I worked in the Dalles, and when they did one street, they did the streetscape, and at first everybody's all upset, oh, my business is gonna be closed, we're gonna do the streetscape, blah, blah, blah. Well, once it got done, all the businesses on the other street said, okay, we want it, come here, and that's usually what happens with urban renewal. People are reluctant at first, and they'll say, well, I don't want you to do this, and then once it's done, it's like, okay, my turn. So, the pros and cons. So what we'll look at, we'll look at the potential of this. I'll run some numbers, Deborah.
Yeah, just one thing that popped into my head while you were talking. There are things that we know will be coming to Lapine, development areas that are a good bet, like the new neighborhood, which is residential. Values there, you know, going from essentially a land base up to the value of a home and then everything altogether. Where do you put those kinds of speculative things into the plan? Because that could really jump values and therefore money in the plan right away.
When I do the financial analysis, I work with Echo Northwest, and what we do is we work with the city folks and say, okay, what development do you think is going to happen in here, in your area? And if there's something that's right next to it, but it relates to the area, you'll go ahead and
adjust your boundaries to pull it in.
So we'll make projections on that.
Okay.
So on this one, we'll contact the property owner and say, how many apartments are you going to be putting in? What's the potential value of those? And then we'll contact the assessor and find out what the property change ratio is and make an estimate of what that value might be. And we'll do that with your help for that whole area. We'll say, okay, who knows what's going to happen in this area? So people who are developers are our best allies there to say, well, so-and-so is going to do this and so-and-so is going to do that. So we add all that into that financial analysis.
Okay.
So a couple of things we'll look at. We'll look at this and bring some information back, both in terms of acreage and potential value it might bring to the area. We'll look at the acreage to go up to Wickiup and see if we can do that, what the prospects are.
Do you have the total acreage? Is that what you were giving us, Bill, 1,100?
Yeah, Deborah gave us that.
That
I haven't played with acreage yet.
Okay. That was commercial, the peak right here.
Right.
Is that right, Deborah?
Yeah, just out of our comp plan,
okay.
If you take 25% of the total, you've got that 1,100 acre number, but then you also have to temper that by the 25% of the assessed valuation. So you have to balance those both.
Right, right. So we'll look at those. So let's talk about on the other side of 97 here. Are we going to include these other commercial properties, or are we just doing basically the one lot off?
What's behind when you go on this side, thank you guys? So if you go a lot off,
so
you know, so it's going to be behind whatever you see on the highway. Some are deeper than others. What's behind them? Mostly blighted. We talked about mobile parks. She doesn't like those at all. There's a lot of issues. They are be nice to clean up and get rid of a couple of mobile home parks that are, but she said that brings unique issues. I don't know if you're in that pink or not. There's got to be one or two.
There's one right here.
On Finley View.
Yeah, it is.
There's
yeah,
two on Finley View. One right behind when you go up Finley View Road.
Be that first yellow lot on Finley View Road.
And then across the street next to the mortuary, you know, is the other one.
But are they included in the pink?
Yeah.
Roundup is.
So Rick asked me about mobile home parks before, and I've worked on plans where we've included them, and I've worked on plans where we've decided not to include them. And let me tell you what the controversy is. The controversy is if you plan a project for a mobile home park, you're dislocating low-income people. There are required relocation payments for people who are relocated from mobile home parks. If you were involved in a project, if the Urban Renewal Agency was, they would be required to make those relocation payments to your mobile park folks if they were involved in helping facilitate that. Some cities have said, Wood Village I worked with, they wanted it in their urban renewal area because they wanted to address it. So we put it in, and at some point if they have enough money, they're going to do something about it. But in Gold Beach, they didn't want the controversy surrounding that. So they decided to leave it out. So happy to do whatever you think is best on that. They're definitely blight,
yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And then the question is, how do you cause them to get developed? Because they're also very economically, they're a good economic engine for the owners, typically. So you've got to find something that's a better economic engine, or you've got to convince them that there's something they ought to be doing for their city that they're not doing.
Mm-hmm.
So.
We'll do it like those mobile home parks when you're going to Costco on, 27th or something there?
That's beautiful.
They built those big, now is that an urban, did they do that make them fix them up and put a big
brick
wall.
Is that Redland again?
In Bend?
That
would be
no.
You know,
Urban Renewal didn't have any part of that.
That was when they submitted their design. And,
oh, okay.
You know, how much does city and how much will the city's code enforcement improve the sum of the potential of that? You know? Well, like cleaning up the one on Finley View. I mean, is there...
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we can be, you know, but they are kind of what they are. Mm-hmm. It, you know, you've got camp trailers. Half of them tend to be almost oversized camp trailers or undersized camp trailers. But most of them wouldn't take hunting.
Yeah.
With one door and the crane windows, and so if there's a fire, the kid, of course, can't get out the window, and there's not a back door. You can picture the results of these. The problem is those people are literally, they were there, buying for $500,000 in camp
right.
chairs. They
and
live
where
in.
Where is that person?
Where they
all
yeah.
Where
else
they
are going to go?
Now, that doesn't mean it shouldn't be developed. I'm just
right.
saying you guys need to decide whether you want to put that on the plate with your urban renewal plan at this point.
Well, I mean, because Brian's is right in the middle of here, and that's the one
right.
that if, I mean, it's the definition of, I remember last winter, the cord going out from the trailer to the kids that were living in the tent or in the snow halls. And I mean, it's, if we're talking about blight.
Okay, can somebody mark
it's in the middle. It's in the middle.
It's
right.
Middle.
It's, you're going to take
so
it.
So it's going to take it anyway.
Yeah, it's in there.
So we mark this one here. How about that one?
That's the round.
The one you just marked, that's one.
Yeah.
Should that be included? What's the first one, Kimmy? Do you think that's...
Yeah. No, it's
behind the sugar pines.
Yeah. It's been a lot of work that I've cleaned that up the last couple of years.
Have.
It's not as bad as it used to be.
Yeah.
They put a lot of money into that.
It still
bad.
Could use a lot more.
It's not as bad as it was.
Are you talking about
Brian's?
Yeah, about Brian's.
Brian's.
No.
All.
Talk to growing up in
the as you go past sugar pines.
Yeah, right behind the sugar pines.
That
one.
Yeah. Yeah, I have cleaned up Brian's.
Somebody in Hawaii
I think that would
cause that's the one in front of Rosa Parks.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so how about this as a compromise? There's a couple of them within this area, right?
Yeah.
Let's just leave those in. And a project that you can put in your plan is low-income housing or redevelopment assistance. And you don't have to specify what it's going to be for, but you can know in your mind that if the owner of one of those mobile home parks comes to you and says, we want to do something, you say, we might have a program for you.
There it is.
I like that.
So, and then, if you decide, you know, if that's successful, that works, right? You concentrate on the ones that are visual, that people can see, that's impacting your commercial core. And in the future that works for you, this could be an amendment to your plan, you know, that 20% that you can add, and you could add in another one, you know, if, so those that are in there, let them be in there and see if, you know, in the future.
And then the Urban Renewal will come and build a brick wall so you wouldn't have to look at
it. No, but, you know, potentially they partner with the state housing division and put in some kind of a nice mixed-use low-income housing development that, you know, would have commercial on the ground floor and apartments above, and that'd be better.
So it sounds like people on the east side just talk about going back one lot or something for now, called one lot. Some of them go deep, some don't. You take this one here, it's a flag lot, so it's going clear back around like this. Then there's little ones. This one's bigger, you know. So you kind of will have to. Yeah.
So what we usually do is we take, if it's a flag lot, we take the whole lot because again, it's just a lot easier for the assessor and for the legal description. It's a little one. You still just take that unless, you know, sometimes
it's one.
People will say, oh gosh, this is a business that really needs to be improved, and I think we want to have it in our urban renewal area because maybe we can give it a loan at some point and be nice. So, you know, we'll do this, and then you guys need to take your little maps and go look through the area and say, well, are we missing something really important here that we don't want to miss?
Yeah, in fact, that little one you said to me, that would be Homestead, because I could see Meany's place and then the Homestead's right behind it. So there
we might need Homestead.
Of course, that just got redone with the...
Well, Jim has just remodeled.
The old home. No, we're talking about the new home.
The old.
The one that's...
Well, it's on 97.
So, Deborah brought up this mixed-use area. A lot of times mixed-use is included because it does support your commercial area, so they're usually tied together. So, does it make sense to include that area or not?
Yes.
I think it does. That's the north part of this part of town that people are looking into.
And Gordy just walked that 28 acres or whatever that is in that corner, the left-hand lower corner. Yeah. Somewhere in there on the lower. Yeah.
And we own the other five acres, 5.5.
I think you want to include that, like Dave said, it's entrance a little bit to this part of town. But the second is, it doesn't add a lot of value right now because it's not worth much. So it's not going to throw us on our 25%. Yeah. And we have tons of land.
Yeah.
Land's
and
not our issue.
Potential.
Yeah. And there's tons of potential because it's bordering 97 for a long way.
Mm-hmm. I have heard a rumor that that there's an idea to develop that into a supermarket shopping center type
golf course.
Golf course. Okay, so that makes sense. So as you go up, where do you stop and then just start taking
right
of
there?
Right there.
Yes.
So we'll look at, Deborah, when we look at this, we'll look at this. We'll add this as a potential. And we'll add going on up to Wickiup as a potential. We'll just see what that gives us. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So when you're talking about Wickiup, just that section up there, or all the property going up to Wickiup, that 3 miles.
I think you
stretch.
Just take the road up there.
Just right along the road. Yeah.
You would just take. You wouldn't even take that full right away. I don't think you would take the bicycle path. You'd take like a 6-foot swath.
So not to take the 6-foot, then you'd have two programs because it has to be connected?
It has to be connected.
Okay.
And you go up and then you take in all the properties that abut on both sides.
Railroad on one side.
We're
going to take the commercial zone.
Right. The commercial zone property.
On both sides.
The commercial zone.
So that kind of mess that's up there is getting cleaned up, that's commercially zoned.
Yes. Okay. Sometime. Yeah.
Well, on the other side, the west side, isn't there property for sale that says commercial property?
Well, there's where the Vicks Tavern and all that right there.
Yeah.
There's
at the junction there.
Okay.
So we would take both sides of the street, the commercial property that abuts 97. That makes sense.
That's why we're all here. I like to know these things because it helps you. Do we dilute the ability to do things because you have so much need out there and you have it down here? When you know it's going to take you a long time, we know we need the little triangle, say first, or down to Huntington. Okay, you kind of focus on what kind of in there. You're going to bring in value from some of those other areas, but. You're not going to have to spend as much in some of that's helping to revalue. When you go out to Wickiup, it's 90% needs help. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of taking in nothing that adds value, but it's kind of like adding an anchor or a big demand. And so I'm just thinking, out loud, are we, by doing that all in one, are we taking on more need than we can reasonably help? But I don't know.
Potential though, too.
I can tell you that the business people up there in the north end are banding together, finally banding together to create some sort of a businessman's group and look at options like Oregon Main Street and some of those things, because they assume that the urban renewal is going to be in the south. Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't want to stop them from banding together.
No, ever.
But.
Well, I just wanted to make a point, and it may or not resonate, but I think it's important because when I moved here a year and a half ago, my best friend lived in, where's the place with all the good wine? And I said to him, he goes, where'd you move? I go, I moved to LaPine. First thing that came out of his mouth, you mean that place with that old cop car sitting there? That's how we remember this town. He lives in California. Yeah. So, I mean, those are important images that you got to consider when you talk about flooding.
The other thing, too, though, to look at is that there, with all the stuff that ODOT's going to be doing in that area, that might be a really good area to get some matches and some grants and stuff to work with. So
the types of things you could do quickly up there, clean up the properties, number one. But you could put a nice entrance plaza sign, welcome to LaPine, that has some kind of feature so that people look at that and that's what they see and think of when they come into LaPine, and that doesn't cost that much, right? That's not going to dilute that much.
I also think that when we get a group, let's say they get the group, and they get to doing something with that property, and that's all old stuff up there, believe me. So, and we're talking about maybe a 20-year plan. 10, 15 years from now, urban renewal may be the very vehicle that needs to be in place at that time to bring that back, even though they've got a group that's sort of doing landscape and stuff like that. So
the other thing, storefront loans don't cost much money, but they have a huge impact. And so I guess what I would do up there is clean up the messes. I'd do some kind of an entrance to LaPine, signage, plaza, something nice, and talk to some property owners about storefront loans. Now, you aren't going to have that money for a few years, but that would be where I'd start in that area. And that's not going to cost that much money to allocate some there. So
you said it takes all these years to get, because we aren't going to have any money coming in for, you know, barely any money coming in. So these are some big projects you're talking about. So this indebtedness, so you go into debt to do these projects?
You don't do them. You wait.
You wait till you have the money.
Deborah, can you go into the slideshow and there be a slide that shows a bar across the bottom? It's a chart.
You want me to just pitch down or?
Yeah.
Okay.
So there are different things to do at the first of an urban renewal area. First of all, you find all the grants and other stuff that you can, ODOT money.
This one?
No, just keep going. There's a chart that will show, it'll have a blue line along the bottom. It's an actual Excel chart.
Oh, okay.
And it'll have a line that goes up through it and here. Keep going. Yeah. There. This shows the frozen base. So this blue shows how the taxing jurisdictions continue getting that money, and then this money, so it starts slow. But that 3% builds up over time. So about year 10 is when you start getting, you know, an amount of money that you might be able to do something with. So go to the next.
It's like paying off your mortgage.
Yeah.
So this is the one you want. This is your appetite, right? These are the projects you want to do. And this is your money. So in the first few years, you don't have that money. So different agencies do different things. Some of them just bank that money and save it in a savings account, just like you and I do on our houses, right? And at some point, you do your remodel when you have enough money. The other way to do it is you've got projections in your plan. If your city, and your city probably won't because you have such a low tax base, if your city has excess money in the general fund, the city might do some of those projects and get repaid by urban renewal when the money comes in. So that's another way that it gets done. Another way is sometimes in Lake Oswego, we had a developer who was interested in doing a project. So they'll upfront the money because they want to do a project. And then at the point that the property taxes start coming in off of that project, you pay the developer back for some of that upfront money that they put in. So there are other kinds of ways to get things going. If you have people in your community who have, I've just been looking at a project in Wenatchee, Washington. It's a Pybus market, it's a public market. It had a $12 million budget to do it. A local family donated $3 million of that because they wanted their community to be better. So looking for people in your community who have money who want to do things is also another way to get things going. And there are lots of people out there who have money that you just maybe don't even think about what they might be able to do for your community, but might be able to do that. But anyway, this shows, and talk about indebtedness. It used to be that you could bond based on anticipation of growth within the area. And with the last recession, you won't get any bond company to place a bond unless it's based on real money that's coming in. So if, a lot of the agencies that I work with at about this point, they know what their income stream is going to be. They've been around for a while. They'll place a bond here that will get them money, you know, that they know it's coming in, right? And they know how much money. It's like your mortgage again. They'll say, okay, I have this amount of money coming in this year, and for the next 10 years, I know that I'll have that amount of money, and they'll place a bond on that, and then the money will be in their pocket instead of waiting for it for the 10 years. So
how many cities or districts have borrowed from the mother agency?
Lots.
Are they required to pay interest?
No.
Really? You have to be careful with that.
Yes.
No, they're all sitting here. Mm. Oh, we can have $1 million renewal in year one. But yeah, you have to really, okay.
You have to be careful. And I'm pretty conservative with, I mean, I've looked at urban renewal plans that people have written that are 40-year urban renewal plans, and I come into the community and I say, no, I don't think that's the right thing to do because your taxing jurisdictions really can't go without that money for that amount of time. But if I work with lots of cities that have excess money in their general fund, and they'll upfront something, and because they want a project to get going, and then the urban renewal will pay them back. And yeah, sometimes some of them go sour, and the
general fund pays for it.
And the general fund pays for it. And you have to know that that's a risk that you're taking when you take that risk. So it's not done lightly, but it's certainly certainly done. So in terms of what we wanted to accomplish tonight, we have input on the boundary. Does anybody not like anything that we talked about on the boundary? Anybody want me to do something different?
So where's the boundaries on the east side? Is that all the pink?
First lots.
One back.
Just one lot back.
One here, one back.
So that's not gonna take in the Roundup Trailer Park.
It's not, no. And we talked about not worrying about that at this point because you got a couple in here that are more visible as you come down the main roads, and if at some point in the future you're really successful and have an appetite to do it, you could add it.
The term was used one lot, okay? And if we want to look at the red building that's the eyesore in town, that would, my idea in dealing with one lot, it wouldn't take in the little plaza that's back behind it.
So what you guys need to do for me is take your little maps out and go find out where one lot doesn't work.
We may need to go two lots.
There may be tons of places.
We may have to have a field trip. Some of us, we just meet here and walk down the street, and we just walk and say, you know, we're going to need to go one more lot here.
Yes, two blocks. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the sooner you do that for me, the better, because we're going to start looking at this boundary and figuring out what that total assessed value is. And if anything causes more heartache in terms of working on an urban renewal plan, is screwing around with your boundary. So, because it makes everything that I do in writing those documents have to change. So
my whole existing conditions analysis changes, and so it costs more money, and so we need to look at a boundary and make a decision on it. And
there's actually only three or four that would be in question there when you look at it.
So we're including the green triangle?
We are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are you good with that?
And but we're going to look at this potentially. We're going to find out some more information about it. We're going to see how much acreage it is. And then going up to Wickiup. And then Wickiup, one block, one lot on each side again, unless you go up there and say, we need to go.
Well, a good portion of it's only going to be one side because the railroad's on the other side. It's just the junction area.
Right, there's that one little commercial.
Well, you can see the blue on the map, top right in the back. Deb, point to the blue of Wickiup's commercial.
Yeah.
There it is. See, there's the mm-hmm. junction, and they go on down the road. There, mm-hmm. it's just that.
And that one block is enough.
Yeah. Between there and Drafter, you want to take everything from 97 to Drafter.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, because it's all blue. It's the same.
Yeah.
It's
not that much.
Yeah.
And we've got the moose and the...
Well, they're on the other side of the road, so...
Leave the moose
and the eagle. Yeah. Wild bird.
Are we talking about the full city property here as we look south?
Well,
I'm just
doesn't matter for us. But it'll go on the, yes, it'll include our property.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, so you'll go down, take in that whole bottom of the pink area then. So the South County Services building will be in?
Well, it doesn't pay taxes. This is county owned, this bottom thing, yes.
That could change.
You know, that could be, it has been mid-state before, you know, the county, you notice they're moving planning over here. They're not doing all that much over there. That building's half empty. Mm-hmm. You can see the day where they decide.
It's not going to hurt you to take it in. Mm-hmm. It's not taxed, so it's not going to count against the total assessed value limit. We aren't going to have a problem with acreage. So if there's potential in the next 20 years that it would be redeveloped, then okay, you should take it in. So when I've got the line across here, it means anything that touches is coming in at this point.
Yeah.
And then you'll tell me if there's a couple where we need to pick up some extras. So let's just let this resonate in your mind a few minutes and talk about public involvement. So there are some things that are required in an urban renewal plan. Maybe resonating. We're required to go to the Planning Commission to say that an urban renewal plan conforms to your comprehensive plan. We're required to do a non-emergency ordinance with your city council, and is that on two separate meetings for La Pine? You can do it in the same
one meeting is just 30 days.
Okay. And then there's 30 days till it's approved. I think in the tentative schedule that we talked about, we did it in two separate meetings, but we don't have to.
Well, maybe we have a hearing one night, just vote on it.
Right. It'll go, an urban renewal plan by statute is started by an urban renewal agency. So once we have all these decisions made and we have a draft urban renewal plan, we'll form an urban renewal agency. So you guys will need to talk about as citizens and administrators and electeds, who's going to be your agency. So there'll be an agency meeting, a planning commission meeting, a presentation to the county commission. They don't vote. You're just telling them this is what we're doing. It's required to present to them. A letter to the taxing jurisdictions telling them the impact. So we'll have that table that projects what the impacts would be on the taxing jurisdictions. A city council meeting that is published to all of your citizens, either through voting records or utility records or postal patrons. So, Deborah?
All citizens or property owners of records or both?
Not both. You can pick. So you can pick registered voters. You can pick addresses in the city. You can pick utility customers.
Okay.
I try to get people to do utility customers because then you can enclose it with your utility bill and it doesn't cost you as much, right? So that's the cheapest way for you to do it if you can make that work.
And in that notice, you tell them, city's talking about doing an urban renewal plan, there's going to be a meeting in front of the city council, open for a public hearing. So those are the required ones. We typically also do just an open house where we invite people to come in. We'll have some boards up that will have the types of projects that will show the boundary, and I'll do a short presentation on what is urban renewal. We typically do that surrounding the Planning Commission meeting just because it's hard for me to always get back and forth, right? So want to make sure people think that's a good idea to do an open house. And if we do one, we want to make sure that we actually get people to come to it. And so, you know, you are absolutely right. I was just going to say that. The most successful things is you have a barbecue, you have hot dogs, you invite the community to come, and then...
There's a timeline on this. So you're talking about, you know, the Planning Commission and the council and all. I mean, when will you have to do this?
Rick and I went through a timeline. If you want your urban renewal plan to be effective as soon as possible, in terms of there's dates that you have to adopt it for the assessor. So this has to be adopted before the assessor certifies their 2015 rule, which happens usually in the mid-September.
Okay.
So we talked about having this voted on in July. It takes 30 days, so it is good the end of August. So it's good before the assessor certifies the new rule. So that's what our target is. So you back from that, it goes, we have the April meeting with you guys, we have a May meeting with you guys, it goes to the Urban Renewal Agency June 11th, to the Planning Commission June 18th, to City Council July 9th for a hearing, and July 23rd for a vote. So it's not messing around and saying, we know what we want to do, we're going to do it, and
get it done.
Get it done. So what is that? April, May, June, July. 4 months.
Can you have joint meetings to consolidate the schedule if you needed to?
Joint meetings of whom?
Planning Commission, City Council.
That's what I was wondering.
I've never done that, and I don't really recommend it, because if the Planning Commission has a problem and they don't pass the resolution that conforms to the comprehensive plan, I've never had that happen. Mm-hmm. But if they do that, then your City Council can't. They can have the hearing, I guess, but then it would cause all kinds of controversy, because people would be saying, well, you don't even have a plan that the Planning Commission approves yet. So I like to give enough time for the Planning Commission to feel like they have real input and look at it, and then if you need to make any changes, and sometimes they've asked me to make changes, and they can be minor changes, but it's not, you know, if they want changes, it's good, because you know they're looking at it and are involved, and that gives you, you give that month or a couple of weeks, it gives you time to make the changes, get the report back out, so.
Okay. And our assessor knows this is coming?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay.
I mean, that's tight schedule, but I mean, like, we can do it.
Well, I was just wondering if we needed to have a, you know, special planning commission or...
And we can have a special council meeting for this, obviously,
yeah.
We would.
So, in terms of public involvement, everybody okay with an open house?
Yeah.
One of the things I would say for an open house is, you know, somebody come in that has done this and sort of before and after pictures, that made a huge impact when I saw something somebody said he was doing.
Yeah, I have a great amount of pictures that show, and I have some from Redmond, so your neighbors that are close, that show that. So yeah, we can do that.
Yeah, that made a huge impact.
Yeah.
Maybe the after hours be coordinated with the chamber or something? That would get a lot of the businesses here.
Yeah. I really like coordinating with the chamber.
The chamber, certainly.
And
have the businesses involved. Yeah, absolutely.
And this having the chamber contact all of their businesses and say, it's important for you to come. Mm-hmm. You need to know about this. And I find if you just advertise it in the newspaper, you don't get people. You need to go door to door. You need to have somebody who says, this is important to our community. We want you there.
Yeah.
And
I find the more people you get, the better it is for your plan, because then people will buy into it. They'll say, we heard it, it sounds great, we want to do this. Otherwise, if it comes out in the newspaper and they read it, they say, well, what are they doing now?
I think if people see the before and afters, that alone sells it, and then they're supportive of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and with that building on the highway, everybody in town knows about it. They want to know what's going on with that, who's doing this and that.
Yeah.
Yes, they do.
And I'll find out more about the Sisters Project and what funding they've used for that, because I think that always helps people if they've seen something on the ground, so they know, okay, oh, that's what they did. Oh, I know that, so.
No, I think that
so are there other ideas about, do you have a website that you want to post information on?
What we can do is, our website's going to go live eventually. it'll be before you come back in a month. It's not as bad as a volunteer. We were going to be on, sorry.
Bite your tongue.
But we will be on, and we could have a link on there and a page. We could do a page Urban Renewal, and we'll have our plans, we'll have our tape and things told, so people have the ability to access that are truly interested.
And I have a fact sheet. I think I gave you one when I did the last presentation. So you can link that fact sheet.
It'll be a chance for our staff to create our first page. New.
That's a really good idea. So
let's do that.
Yep.
Are there any other ideas about how to get other folks involved, make sure people feel positive about what you're doing?
My thought on the committee when we form the actual, so this group meets three times, then we'll end up with a committee or a board, has to then meet, and then they're the ones who will go on forever. People will come and go, but it'll go on. And you talk about whether it's just the council or other. And a lot of the cities have, and then some have the other, and then they get in a disagreement and they take it back. Madras, I set that one up, and I did it with called other. We put, you could do five or seven people, obviously, and you could have anything less than a quorum. We did put a couple council people on it, so you had some council involvement. But this is why I did it that way, and you can, I won't, because I know the answer to this, but I want to say it. My council at the time, none of them owned a business. And I thought, if you're going to talk about the business zone, that for me it was important.
Yeah.
The people who paid a payroll, who owned a business, who might have to, is it truly impacted, they needed a say. And for us on the council, who live all over the place, who don't actually live in that zone, I thought it was important to have a couple representatives, but I didn't feel that to get the buy-in, I needed business people. And so we went and filled it with a couple council people, and then we found business people.
So is it still that way?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's worked fine. And they've never had a disagreement. It's been there 8 years.
So I can give you some other. Wood Village has a couple council people. They have a planning commissioner, and they have some business folks. Hood River has, because one of them's on the port, they have two port commissioners, two city council members, a planning commissioner. And I think that's it. Phoenix and Talent both have two council members and then some business people. Tillamook has two council members and some business people. Winston had that and the city council took it back.
Ben took it back.
Phoenix has gone through the last year trying to decide whether to take it back, and last night voted not to take it back. So sometimes that happens. You get a new city council on who says, I don't want somebody else spending the money. I want to spend the money. And that's what it's always over. It's always over who gets to spend the money. And that's always the fight. So I've seen it work. I've seen it work well and not so well. One of the things that another consultant that I've worked with brings up that is, if you have a city administrator who's the one who's running the Urban Renewal Program, and he or she reports to the city council and to the Urban Renewal Board, and this council wants him to do one thing and the board wants him to do the other, he gets caught.
Yeah.
So that can happen. For the most part, I've seen it work out okay.
What's your thoughts? And I'd like your input, because we need, it's something in a couple months, or a couple months we have to decide, so.
And the council makes that decision. You guys can give them input, but the way the statute's written, it's the city council who decides who is the urban renewal agency.
The way you did in Madras sense.
Yeah, it makes sense.
I like that.
Yeah, definitely.
I think the council would feel comfortable with two, and logically businesses.
Did you have the city planner on yours?
There might have been someone from the planning commission, which those were citizens.
Mm-hmm.
Our planning director staffed it, not the city manager.
Yeah, it depends on the size of the city.
Yeah.
Lots of the cities I work with are really tiny, and it's the city manager, and I'm good friends with lots of city managers, because they'll call me, they don't have time to do it all. So I do a lot of the kind of reporting stuff for them, or I help them design programs or whatever for the smaller cities. If they're big enough, then they'll have somebody maybe in the planning department, or maybe they'll have somebody in engineering if they're actually doing projects. So it just depends on the size of your city and what capacity there is.
Well, I think we're very lucky here that our planning director was involved in the comprehensive plan and everything, so she's, you know, very familiar with what we can.
And what this is the reality too. You won't, don't you suppose it? Because we're smaller and it's going to take a while. It's not going to be a monthly meeting.
No.
You may, because if you have no money to spend, and it's going to take a year to build some, and you've got your plan that says, you know, you don't need to come down and have someone to fake up an agenda.
That's
just
right.
To give you a reason to meet. You don't have any other responsibilities. It's not like
you have to put together a budget.
Yes, right.
You have to put, and the first couple of years, that's really all you do. You put together a budget. Unless you've got some developer who comes in who wants to do a project, and they're willing to upfront some money, and then it's pretty exciting. But that doesn't happen that often. It does happen, but not that often.
And then if there's a problem, if you do it with mixed, the council can always pull it back.
That's right.
About. So in other words, you give
and it just
of
takes
doubt.
A resolution of the council to pull back. Obviously, one of the things that I talked to the folks in Phoenix about is they're wanting to do a big market hall, great project, really exciting, like a public market thing. And they're going to need a developer to come in, and they're going to need people to populate that with their businesses. And if you've got the city council fighting with your urban renewal agency, what faith are people going to have that it's going to work? You know, so I told him, you know, you need to make this decision and move on, because fighting in public is not going to help you at all. So that was what we needed to do tonight. And what I'll bring back for you to look at are goals and objectives that are tied to commercial areas and what things you like to do in commercial areas. And we'll pick through those and find out what ones work for you and what you want to do, and if people want to add other things about supporting parks districts or supporting the fire district or whatever for public facilities, we can talk about how you frame that and what you say. So we'll talk about that in projects next time. So you can start thinking about, you know, are there projects within our transportation system plan that need to be done? Are there infrastructure projects that have to be done before properties can develop, and think about what it is that you think will improve your city.
Just a quick question. On your timeline, if there's a district that is totally against this and they voice their opinion, can they hold up your timeline?
Yes, they can. The where they hold it up is a non-emergency ordinance can be referred to voters. So if the city council votes affirmative and you have a district that decides they don't want to do this and they go out and get enough signatures to put it on the ballot, they can do that. And you will have approved your plan, so it can still go to the assessor, I think. I'll have to check on this. So that you catch that year, but you may have to terminate it if the voters say no. 30 days they get to
you. So as part of the plan, I think education is really important to educate the folks that, you know, Greg broke down the numbers, it's not a huge impact in the districts at the start. So I think that's going to be key for education. If that does happen, if you get the pushback from the districts, we have to educate folks that it's not that big of a impact.
And a lot of times what we do is we say it's this amount and it's this percentage of their annual budget. And it's usually between 1 and 4% of an annual budget. So So that information is really helpful for people. On the other hand, I've had fire districts come in and be really very difficult. And people rally around fire districts. So you guys, you need to think about how to make that all work.
Schools, 911, fire districts.
Schools are usually fine. It's the fire districts that if there's going to be somebody opposing, it's usually a fire district.
Is that what you were talking about, Stu?
I'm sorry, what?
The fire district, is that what you're talking about?
I wasn't going to name any names.
I was just going to say, it'd be nice to appear.
I told him we just cut the water off.
Old leverage.
Well, hopefully they can get there. We can get them to look at it in the broader picture, like everyone else, because if you, A, you might be able to help them with the project, B, we may put in water lines in places, you put in some fire hydrants, you're buying down high-risk buildings, because that's what you're remodeling, making better, so a fire district, these, a lot of groups, they're only looking at that, their own. Now, in the case of this fire district, remember, where he's 18% or whatever it is, the fire district goes clear down, includes Crosswater and everything, where his parks district doesn't. You do the math on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The city's value in the fire district must drop below 10%.
Yes.
And then you take these little breakdowns, and it isn't going to be 4 or 3%. It may be a fraction.
Yeah, I think it's really important to break that down.
And then if you participate with them in a project, then you can actually buy that back.
So let me tell you what happened with fire districts, just to give you some history. In 2009, the Special Districts Association, pretty much led by the fire districts, lobbied hard for changes in the laws to urban renewal. And they were, I think they had some very good comments. There were some districts that were just going on and on and on that never ended and never put any money back on the tax rolls. And they were saying, look, if you're going to do a district, have it end, put money back on the tax rolls. So there were some changes in the legislature in 2009 that put more restrictions on urban renewal. What happened is the fire districts were very involved and they were teaching the fire districts how to oppose urban renewal. And the big districts have backed off of all of that. You know, they're the ones who got everybody excited, right? TVFNR. They've backed off. They've been really good. I've worked with him on a number of projects. They've been really good supporters because they understand the need of it. But they haven't filtered that message down to all of the other chiefs that, okay, we've now turned around and we're figuring out how to work with them. And so everybody got all worked up about urban renewal, but they haven't
unworked them.
And so it's true. So there's work be done to show them the impact, but also to maybe have them talk to these other fire chiefs and say it's okay.
The other fire districts in Central Oregon, we talked about Redmond, Haslam, and Ben, and Sisters, and Matters, and everything. Those fire districts did not oppose them. In fact, Jefferson County, that one, the Jefferson County Fire Chief made the motion for us to do our $14 million plan. So it's kind of disconcerting that we don't want to participate to be here, but we oppose it. So that is not normal in the region of what you appear to have going on. Stu said he read in the minutes that the board didn't want to participate because they're not in the minutes. But
well, and I think it's education, a publication. It all comes down to education.
Yeah. Yeah.
And don't you think when you present the facts, when you really present the numbers,
well, but it's too bad they aren't here. They would be just like Bob's here, and the library is participating. You know, maybe he just could be here tonight, talk about what we're coming down from Ben. But if you're here, you kind of become part of it.
And I'm sure you invited them.
Oh, yes. they were invited with two emails, including the chief and or board member. And then he did officially, I mean, he called me, said they talked about it. It's on their official board meeting, so nothing I'm saying is right. Private. You know, public agencies or public agencies, special districts, sometimes forget that. But no, they talked about it at their board meeting, and they did not want to participate. Is correct? Mm-hmm. It's in their minutes.
Dan, did you have a...
Yeah, is there any, are there any numbers, like projected numbers of accelerated values and how that would impact, say, on the average because of improvement districts?
You know, there's an Association of Oregon Redevelopment Agencies, it's called AORA, and I'm a member of it as a consultant. And we've brought up for a number of years that they've done a really poor job of keeping statistics like that. Mm-hmm. And we're working on, we have a committee working on trying to get communities to keep better metrics so that they can answer those questions in a better way. I have in the slideshow that I gave you all earlier a number of communities where I went in and looked at the percent increase within the urban renewal area and the percent increase outside of the urban renewal area so I could show the impact. But we haven't done a good job, and we're working on that, and I'd really like them to do a better job.
Well, I think the impact, I mean, it seems to me that the impact would go beyond the boundary.
It's
going to influence the value of the whole community, I would think.
Yeah, okay. Makes sense. Other questions?
So we're going to do a walk?
Well, that would...
I think it would be really great if you guys did do a walk within the next week.
We'll do it while you're gone. She wants to send her gone for 2 weeks.
How effective is urban renewal in areas that are zoned commercial, but you have a lot of existing residences? How do you get people to want to change the use of their property?
It starts, like I said, with the Dalles. You start in one place and it improves. How many of you have been to Hood River Heights, the area in Heights in between where Hood River goes up to the mountains? There's a little business community there. I just did an urban renewal plan there. All little houses, mm-hmm. not all, a lot of little houses that now have turned into restaurants, and as one becomes successful, the next turns. And so you have to start. And as you grow, then it puts pressure on the others, and
because there's a lot of that process in this area that
And that's why we've talked about this is a great area to start your impact, because you have kind of some businesses right there, and you have potential to develop property there. And once you start someplace, then it'll grow.
Yeah. Okay. And just south of the schools along Morrison and Stillwell and Salzer, there are a lot of old residences in there.
So in here?
Up in that area.
Yeah.
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 They're going on. Mm-hmm.
But you can, I don't know if they have character. If they're, you go to places, and I know these are in your future, they aren't where you are now, but you look at Ashland, a lot of commercial businesses are in little houses that they fixed up. They have a beautiful historic inventory. And Hood River Heights has the same thing. There are houses that they fixed up to put the commercial businesses in. And those aren't necessarily beautiful, but they're bungalows, cute little bungalows, so they're nice, they're substantial.
Prineville's done that a lot.
Yeah, eventually those old houses transition. It takes a while.
Your
markets have to come up enough to kind of make it work. I'm assuming one of the things is, you start here. I know it matters, we had some projects we wanted that were specific, but otherwise we kind of took areas and did it right. Because some people would say, well, just like Kitty mentioned, why over here? And I'd say, yeah, you do. And that's why it's a 20-year plan. But that may be your 18. I mean, I can't go fix a house here, fix one here. You drive through town, you look the same.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to take an area invest in it, and then kind of incrementally grow from there. And so some people think everybody has to be equal. I guess it's not equal. There's a whole big pink going to be in the district, but you are going to have to focus.
Right.
Is that kind
absolutely.
Of?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Focus here and focus your lucky day.
Okay.
Well.
Thank you all.
You're
very
helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you.
The computers are excluded from the next meeting.
No.
Go ahead and get snacks on the way out, please.
I'll see you later.
Because otherwise we have to throw them away.
Oh, I read that in a minute. No beavers in the next meeting.
Thank you.
Thanks, Stu, for not being